Welcome to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. Hi, I'm David Manti with Cannabis Equipment News, and with me today is Jeremy Luciano. He's the founder and CEO of GHS Industries. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Appreciate it, David. Thanks for having me.
Before we get started, if you could please like, subscribe, and share this episode, I'd really appreciate it. We appreciate all the ongoing support for the CEN podcast. If you could leave us a positive review on Apple Podcasts or whatever platform you listen to us on, we'd really appreciate it. Well, I'd like to start off by finding out, what is GHS? I mean, I found out that recently you guys were Global Hemp Solutions, right? So when the switch?
Well, actually, we're in the process of making this switch and finalizing things. There's reasons behind that. Happy to discuss that. But to address your initial question, you know, what is Global Hemp Solutions, as we were previously called, or GHS Industries? And the name may change. To me, names are kind of irrelevant. Some people create something because they have some attachment to a name. I have no attachment to any name, to be honest with you. But our company, ultimately, we are an equipment manufacturer. We are food grade manufacturers. We design, conceptualize, build, install, and then monitor systems even after installations for clients for the hemp industry and other industries as well.
Okay. Sort of what is your expertise in? Do you come from the food industry?
I do not. So to say I'm an expert in anything, I would never venture to give myself that classification. I am well versed in many things. To be involved in the hemp industry, I have an engineering mindset to where I can kind of look at scenarios and situations and try to just invent or develop some type of solution, whether it's a physical solution or some other practices in place to help people. Ultimately, myself, I'm a servant. I love helping others. It's naturally in me. And so even being involved in this industry, it's a personal industry for me with this plant that we call hemp. And I just found my footing in it.
What specifically, what types of equipment do you guys manufacture?
Sure. It's a good question. So quite a few things in regards to the medicinal side, if you will. Again, verbiage is so all over the place within this industry, but growing the crop for medicinal purposes, meaning extractions involved to get what we call CBD oil. We build the industrial size dryers, depending on the scale, something small scale for a farmer that's doing a couple acres, or large scale, 500 plus thousands of acres. So we do the drying systems. We also design our own separation systems, which actually clean the biomass and separate, I don't want to say a byproduct, because nothing really is a byproduct when it comes to hemp, but to kind of clean and further refine the material and separate it into different usable pieces like stalks and stems that can be further processed, seeds that can be further processed, as well as the floral material that we take into extraction. And then past that point, we actually are heavily involved in the fiber processing part of the hemp industry. We have formed an amazing relationship with the world leader in hemp fiber processing technology. They're based in Europe. We spent some time with them over the past few years, and we're lucky enough to get ourselves a contract to be their pretty much exclusive dealer for the entire U.S. And so we are bringing that proven technology that takes the raw straw from the bale, processes it all the way through to cottonization, ultimately kind of that saving grace for the farmers being the fiber production side. And then on top of actually providing that technology, since we are manufacturers, we have a manufacturing facility. It's just under a couple hundred thousand square feet, just east of Louisville. And we're able to actually manufacture some of those components that we're bringing from Europe. So we're bringing new technology into the U.S. And then we're also bringing the manufacturing of that technology here to the U.S.
I bet that helps with it in terms of servicing it as well.
It's actually one of the key points that many people in this industry look for, because they want to know, hey, if I got a problem, are you going to be here to help? And if we're looking to other countries, while some countries have been in the industry for a long time, especially Europe, we know that China is a big industry there for manufacturing, and some people decide to go that direction. And then they run into some issues at times. And when you try to mitigate those problems, you don't have anybody to help service it. So with us manufacturing, that is one of the best parts of it with our industry and our company, is that we provide the services even after we install these systems.
Are you guys specific to hemp and CBD, or no? Okay.
No, we're not at all. We are food grade manufacturers. There are some other industries that we do help service. Most of our clients in those industries don't allow us to speak on the crops. They try to kind of just like in hemp, everybody tries to hold everything close to their chest and protect it. Mm-hmm. We have tried to release some marketing videos to help those partners of ours and those clients. And then they're like, we don't want anybody to know. So do we service other industries? Absolutely. But I can't get into specifics on what we do.
Okay. You know, I talk to a lot of equipment manufacturers in this industry, and they struggle with just one specific product line. You know, they focus on packaging or they focus on weighing. How are you able to sort of have multiple product lines in various parts of sort of processing and sort of still put out a quality product?
Well, I appreciate that for calling it a quality product. Thank you. I'm a humble person in regards to, I don't focus on me. Our company motto is, it's not about us. It's about the bigger picture. And as I said at the beginning of this discussion is that I have a gift of being able to analyze situations and see a problem and try to produce a solution for that problem. Now, I would never say that I'm not an engineer. You know, I didn't go to school to be one. I have a medical background. Prior service as well. So what I'm able to do is honestly, it's gifts that our Creator blessed me with. And I can't put it past that. It's nothing I'm doing on my own. I just have some personal gifts and I'm fortunate enough to be placed in this industry to help try to solve problems. And then on the building side of things, I may be able to come up with some particular designs to solve the problem, but I have a team of engineers that work with me over at our manufacturing facility, depending on the time of year, depending if we have COVID or not. We have anywhere between 500 to 700 employees working at our manufacturing facility, which is what also allows us to service our clients anywhere in the world at any time.
Wow. That's, you talk about the pandemic. How did that sort of impact your business? I am assuming that at least on a social distancing sort of perspective, that had to kind of throw a wrench into things.
It did. I'm a very personable person. I love to be engaging with individuals face to face. I love to shake hands. I'm a big hugger. Obviously, right now it makes it a little difficult to go up and just hug people and shake their hands. I'm not the type of CEO that likes to sit behind a desk as I am right now. I love being out in the field. I'm very hands-on. So with the pandemic, both sides of the spectrum, I guess, to say its effects were. I saw positivity in it on a personal level because it allowed me to be in my home and spend more time with my family and close friends and relatives and with my Creator. I follow Scripture through and through, so it allowed me some time to spend in my devotional period and just learn more and build that relationship. And then on the business side of things, it's kind of both sides. We have some people, you talk to some farmers, it hurt them because they weren't able to get products out and get to market because of travel restrictions and whatnot. But then you have others where it said it kind of slowed everything down around them that kind of allowed them to get a leg up. And that's kind of what I feel it did for us. It kind of slowed down the whole industry in a sense and allowed us to prepare mentally for what we're going to be doing in the upcoming seasons.
Right.
And that's what we really were focused on.
So at what point when you were at home with your family, did the switch where you're like, I appreciated all this time with you guys, but I got to get back out there.
Well, I can understand where some get to that point where you're just like, okay, I need my personal space now. And obviously if you have a large network or a big family that you just don't like being with all the time, then you're going to run into that situation. For me, family is very important. And to me, family is not just our blood. Family is people that, you're there for, you help out any given chance that you possibly get, and you serve them, just like Scripture says, you're to love your brother as yourself. And for me, my family is not my blood family. Specifically, it's anybody that I come in contact with, even our clients, they become family for us.
Yeah, no, I guess, to that point, for me, it was getting back to that extended family. Where it's like, all right, the four of us are doing great here, but let's start working some people in.
Let's start filling in some gaps a little bit.
Yeah. Well, let's go back to the beginning. How did you find yourself in the industry?
Oh boy. Again, medical background. I spent about 10 years doing orthopedic trauma surgery as a surgical assistant. Used to travel the world. That was the career that I took after I got out of the service, where I suffered a spinal injury. I'm a SEER graduate. That's a survival, evasion, resistance, and escape. That's what the Department of Defense puts military personnel through when they need to ensure that they can protect information abroad. And that training was a little tough on me, and it hurt my back pretty well. That's caused me issues to this day, and we're talking 15-year time span. And then in the medical field, I learned a lot about the human body. And then during my time, my 10-year tenure in the medical field, my back really started hurting, losing feeling in my legs, my fingers, bladder control, just a whole lot of issues that typically would cause people to turn to other medications, big pharma. And I went through a very dark hole for many years in my life because of that. I'm a statistical veteran that was just given a ton of medication. My mind went into a dark, dark place. Attempted suicide. I actually have a testimony video up on my personal YouTube page about this. And to be frank, I put a gun to my head and pulled the trigger. I'm very, very lucky that our Creator intervened and stopped it. And I'm here today. And because of that, that was the pivotal point in my life where I gave up anything for me. I gave my life to servitude to our Creator and what He wants for me. You know, we're all created by something or someone, right? Something put everything around here. And we have a purpose in this life, and it's to serve others and to love, right? Everybody knows about this, you know, above all else, love. It's what Scripture says. And, you know, one love, just to love everyone and love yourself. And for me, you know, I was introduced into cannabis about a decade ago in Washington State, where it's legal. And I began to start growing my own medication, built a network and met some people, started growing for other patients, then started doing large grows for like licensed I-502 grows for actual medical marijuana. And then when the hemp industry started after the farm bill, I began to kind of stretch my legs out a little bit and venture into hemp for sustainability. When GHS was created, my focus was not ever CBD. That to me, that was a low hanging fruit for many people, just a way for them to make some money. Some people saw an option for, you know, a healthier lifestyle. But when it came to hemp, I saw what the biggest part of it is. And that's a sustainable plant that can quite literally help change the planet.
Mm-hmm. When you were at that dark point, what was the intervention? Did something malfunction?
You talking about in regards to the gun?
Yeah.
My friend, no. Yeah. It was the grace of God Himself intervening. And that is no joke. I am an avid marksman. I was trained by the military. I have, you know, the firearms are second nature to me.
Right.
And that firearm has never malfunctioned ever. And so for it to take place in that day, at that time, when I was literally crying out, it was a big deal. And there was no other explanation for it, no mechanical explanation for it. I mean, I was looking at it, like looking at the round, I'm like, well, I don't understand this. Mm-hmm. That was what flipped the switch for me. Like, clearly I'm not supposed to die. I'm supposed to be here for something that I don't know.
Right.
So I gave my life and said, use me for whatever it is that you want. And He placed me in this industry.
Well, that is just incredible, first of all. And also thank you for your service and just glad you're still here. And I mean, what was it when you were in that sort of dark place from all the other prescription medication? What was that introduction to cannabis in Washington? Could you discuss how that happened?
Well, you know, messing around with cannabis in my teenage years, as most people probably dabble into, you know, things like that. I knew there was something specific about my mind, how the way my brain worked and how I saw things with the world. And so I actually started using marijuana, if you want to call it that, cannabis, probably at about 14 years old, regularly. And I wasn't a typical stoner. I wasn't somebody that smoked pot all the time. I knew that it was something that helped me. Mm-hmm. And not till too long ago, maybe about a year ago, I was actually diagnosed with a high active form of autism. And understanding now how my brain operated as a child, I knew that cannabis was the medication that allowed me to, one, focus properly, to be able to slow my mind down because it works very, very fast, many different things at many different times. And it allowed me to really hyper-focus on things. And then being around crowds is very difficult for me. And it's just, it's kind of been a saving grace for me. So I don't praise the plant itself, you know, all glory to the Father. But I'm very grateful for the plant that He created to give for me as a tool and a medicine for me. And so knowing what it did for me as a child in teenage years, and then once I'm an adult and it's legal for me to actually purchase it, that's when I really started dialing things in to feel what was going to work for me. You know, certain strains, understanding about terpene profiles, and really figuring out, going through a safe trial and error, nonetheless, for myself to figure out what's going to work for me. Mm-hmm. And then when I realized, hey, this is safe, you know, I was able to reach other vets and say, hey, I know what you're going through. Because if you've ever talked to a vet, it's difficult for them to trust medical professionals. I still, to this day, don't trust them. And I was one. Mm-hmm. And so they need to know who they can relate with and somebody that's been through the things that they have dealt with and seen. And so that actually has been a door opening for me as well.
So you start growing the plant. What was that like when you first started growing it? And then, did you ever start growing, for a commercial grower?
So when I first started, it was just for my personal medication. Mm-hmm. After I started doing so, I had a green thumb. I was pretty good at it. I would never call myself a master grower, but yeah, I'm pretty good at doing some grows. And then I started working with some friends who were building their own dispensaries when it first started taking off in the Northwest and Portland area and Vancouver, Washington area. And then when I crossed paths with them, and then I started doing industrial grows, I-502 mm-hmm. grows in Washington State, very large scale. Mm-hmm. What people aren't used to seeing, you know, large, you know, 10,000 plus square foot greenhouse and indoor grow operations.
So when I talk to equipment manufacturers in this industry, they typically have brown thumbs. How did you take your green thumb and go into food grade equipment? Shouldn't you be out growing?
Well, again, with the spinal injury, it's pretty taxing to be a farmer, to be a grower. And when we're talking about the hemp industry, we're kind of stepping into true agriculture as mm-hmm. opposed to, you know, medicinal indoor grows like you do in the cannabis industry. It's mm-hmm. it's day and night, completely different. And my body cannot take it. It's very labor intensive and I just can't handle it. Mm-hmm. I do have a really good ability to speak with people and generate business relationships. And again, with our Creator just being as divine as He is, I actually had somebody cross my path as I was driving on the highway. They saw my company truck, decided to call me and said, hey, we're a manufacturing company. We want to work with you. Huh. Okay, let's have a talk. And so we formed a partnership and we've been partners ever since. Right. They opened up their business to me and we kind of joined forces. I have an understanding of this plant and how the end products need to be. I have a somewhat mechanical mind, an understanding of things from an engineering perspective. So when you place that with actual engineers who know how to build systems from scratch, from raw metals, laser cutting the steel, you know, put us together, it's pretty much unstoppable. And then we're trying to build equipment that will actually help. And it's not about making money and selling a bunch of random equipment. It's about proving those concepts and then entering them into the industry.
Well, and actually that's a really interesting point, just because, you know, in some of the other industries that I cover, you find that profiteering. Whereas in this industry in particular, most people want everyone else to succeed. So it's not like I'm just trying to make one sale with this piece of equipment. It's like, no, I want you to use this until you grow out of it, and then I'll build you something better.
It's funny how you said most people. It's in any industry, I think. You know, I've been well-versed in a few other industries, and you're going to have your good and your bad in just about anything in this world. Mm-hmm. And even from an equipment manufacturing standpoint, I have seen where other manufacturers are focused on selling equipment. We're focused mm-hmm. on providing solutions. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to try to sell something to somebody to make money, but you know, I have a huge problem when I see manufacturers pushing a piece of equipment, selling it at a high markup because it has the name hemp in front of it, right, and just trying to get rich off of a farmer. And they're looking for somebody to say, hey, what's the equipment that's really going to help me be successful? Oh, this is exactly what you need. A couple hundred grand here, you're going to use it. It's going to be great for you. the farmer not knowing that that was their R&D phase of equipment. That's like their stage one. And next thing you know, in a half a season, they're doing phase two and phase three. And you're like, wait a minute. So this didn't really work. Oh, we learned some new things about that. So you sold me something that actually was not good for me to use. They're selling people. And I see that issue, like even from seed producers, selling farmers hopes and dreams. And if you talk to a lot of farmers, they feel like they got their tails handed to them because they were sold these pipe dreams. And it's not that everybody's lying to them, but some people are preying on the farmers to get rich in this industry. And it's a sad thing.
So when did you found Global Hemp Solutions?
About 2.5 years ago.
Okay. And as a result of that partnership, so are you affiliated with another company? Are you a subsidiary or are you standalone?
Standalone.
Okay. So what's the current turmoil between Global Hemp and GHS?
Well, I would say there's turmoil between the two. I can speak publicly about some of this. So you can easily look up and see about lawsuits that are happening in this industry. Over a year ago, we were actually given some documents from a company called Global Hemp. And if you look them up, they are, in essence, a retail company that sells some different brands of retail products like lotions and shampoos and things of that nature from products in like CVS and Walmart. And so we're not in the same type of, we're all in hemp industry, but we don't have the same clientele. We deal directly to business, they deal with things. So it became this big back and forth, as you know, with most litigation does. So we're standing our grounds for a long time with this. And so right now we are actually still currently into a negotiation phase of what needs to happen on our end, because they don't want us using the name Global Hemp Solutions. Mm-hmm. So even kind of looking further into that, notice GHS Industries Incorporated. We used to be an LLC. Now we're subchapter S corporation. So we actually moved up a little bit to allow us to expand some. But now even with GHS Industries Incorporated, they're throwing a little red flag. They don't want GHS used at all. So we're negotiating on how that's going to look. It's one of those things like, do you dump money to stand your ground and prove principle, or do you calculate it all out to find out? And then what about the market? So one of those chaos issues that, and I know other people face them. I'm actually a little concerned. There's probably 15 other companies that use the word global and hemp right at the beginning. Global Hemp Association is one of them.
Yeah.
So, and I think this industry hasn't realized it yet, but I mean, you know, big companies, they exist. They will get into this industry when everything is absolutely legal. Right now, they're still gray area, so they're not in it. Once they come in, they're going to start going after all of these mom-pa companies, the small startup companies that are using names that infringe on their rights in some way, shape, or form. And then it comes down to who's got the biggest war chest to stand the test of time.
Right. Right. Let's make some lawyers rich.
And, you know, I don't like any of that. I think, you know, again, we follow scripture and it speaks very clearly against, you know, filing lawsuits against people. Try to solve the problem between one another if there is something, you know, I think that's been lost.
Yeah, no, that's I definitely agree with you where there isn't the ability to sometimes just like sit down and let's come to a reasonable conclusion.
Right.
A little bit people are running a little too hot.
Egos get involved.
Yes. Yes. Agreed. So do you get into the medical advocacy side of the business at all, given your medical background?
On a personal level, yes. Yeah. Legally, I don't do because of legal, possible legal ramifications, doing it in a public sense. I don't. Making claims is a big no-no right now with the FDA. You can see what they're doing for retailers. I used to also have a retail store that we had open, a physical location, and we closed that down because of just many issues. Not to mention having a retail store is very difficult right now as well. You know, it's questionable. You know, I have a lot of friends and family that ask me things, and I, even with them, I'm not a doctor. What I'm about to tell you cannot, you know, I give that whole little that disclaimer right at the beginning and say, but I'll help you out the best I can and give you the tools. I educate. I don't say this is what will work for you, because nobody can say that about anybody, because everybody's body is absolutely different. Yep. If you were to eat a slice of pie and me a slice of pie, how our body reacts is completely different. Same thing if you had a glass of wine and I did, our bodies react differently. Well, same thing with medication. Mm-hmm. When your doctor prescribes you with, you know, mental medication or something, they say, take this for 3 to 4 weeks, then come see me and we'll adjust as needed. And I think it's the same thing when it comes to using cannabis or, you know, hemp-derived products. It's a matter of educating the people. Hey, do you know what a terpene is? Let me explain to you what this is and why they're so important. Mm-hmm. CBD is a cannabinoid. Let's talk about this and all the cannabinoids and why the entourage effect is important. And once you give people the tools, then they can make their own decisions. They just need to know.
I mean, do you ever run into trouble with family at Thanksgiving that are just looking for a simple yes or no?
You know, because of how my mind works, I'm very explanatory and I'm a very black and white individual. I wouldn't say legalistic, but because of the autism, I don't see gray areas. Things to me are black and white, is or isn't. So when somebody asks me a question, I can't just give them an answer that they're looking for. I typically have to answer the exact question that they're asking. Me knowing that they asked the wrong question, but they don't know. So it's sometimes I have to be like, okay, I know what you want. Yes, this is it. Okay. But it's just how I act as a person.
So in your bio, you had mentioned, you know, trying to steer clear of stakeholders that are looking to make a quick buck in this industry. You know, how were you able to, as you were creating your company, avoid these toxic personalities?
So to completely avoid is next to impossible. But I believe that I've done pretty well. I did have some business partners that started working with me. Just a little toxic. Some things just did not go well. But the way that I'm able to do so, to be honest with you, it's discernment. It's a gift. It's being able to analyze. I can read people very well from a physical sense, like a human lie detector, something that the government taught me to do, reading, you know, décolleté, rosacea, patterns of breathing, you know, eye movement, micro expressions, things of that nature. And then honestly, not to say judging in a negative connotation, but based on someone's fruits, you know, the actions that they're doing, the things that they do, the crowds that they keep around them, I'm able to kind of determine if a relationship is something I want with a person or an entity. So when it comes with who we build relationships with, I vet very extremely and kind of, I want to say, you know, pull people over through the mud, but I want to know everything about them and how they, what makes them tick as a person. You know, business is one thing. I need to know on a personal level, because when you do business with people, I mean, you're ultimately, it's a marriage that you're creating. Oh, yeah. And I've had some pretty bad divorces, but I am a man of God and I will always do what is right. My morals and ethics actually prevent me from being able to conduct business the way that most people do. I can't just, you know, when you see a lot of people switching over to make masks and sell hand sanitizer, I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. And why? Well, for one, I don't believe in that stuff at all when it comes to this COVID thing and wearing the mask. I'm a medical background. You're not going to trick me into this stuff. Mm-hmm. So when people are creating, it makes me wonder, well, why are they doing that? Do they truly believe in something, or are they looking for a way to make money? Mm-hmm. And to me, typically would come down to people are looking for a way to make money. And when I see somebody that is their focus is not truly on the people, which ultimately in this industry, it comes down to the farmer. I am farmer focused. Mm-hmm. That'll never change. Money is nothing to me. I don't really care. My father will give me everything that I need to live this life the way that he asks. All I have to do is be a servant.
Yeah. So with your understanding of masks and sanitizer, stuff like that, did that conflict with trying to operate from a manufacturing facility perspective?
So not for the manufacturing facility. Luckily, the management at our factory, we're kind of on the same page with things. They don't require their employees to wear masks, but they have things available. If you want sanitizer, it's all over the place. You want to wear a mask, there they are for you, but they're not going to enforce. And that's where I have an issue with. It's enforcing. But, you know, everybody got their own rights. If you want to wear something. You want to put hand sanitizer on, put it on.
Yeah.
But the forcing things is kind of where I drew the line.
Okay. I'd be interested in knowing, so you talk about losing business as a result of your like ethical and moral stands, you know, with that understanding, do you realize that GHS sort of you have your own ceiling because you can only get so big to operate with such a compass?
No, actually, I don't think we have a ceiling at all. And Here's why. So GHS, you notice we were called Global Hemp Solutions at the beginning, and now it's GHS Industries. So one thing that we kept and rolled over was GHS. And there's a reason for that. And I talk about this in my testimony video. The letters GHS, it didn't originally stand for Global Hemp Solutions. Mm-hmm. When I first started to get into this industry with this particular company, I was given a word from our creator. I call it ultimately a vision. He came to me and said, hey, this is what I want you to do. And this was very soon after I had that near-death experience. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, this is what I want you to call this company. And I'm going to put all the right people in your path at the right time for you. And just listen to me and we'll make all this work. I'm like, okay, Father. And so I did so. GHS stands for God hates sin. Mm-hmm. In scripture, and he does. So because of that, I just made that the basis of the company. Also trying to do some nonprofit work with it as well. Again, GHS may have to change because of other reasons, but if it is, so be it. But in regards to a ceiling cap, you can't put our creator into a box. If he's going to make something happen, he's going to make it happen. But hey, if he tells me to get out of this industry tomorrow, I'm going to be obedient and get out of the industry. So again, it's not what I want. It's never has been what I want. It's never been what I'm trying to create. That's nothing that you see within this company is something that I created. I'm literally the physical object that's doing the work that our Father is saying, hey, this is what you're going to do. I don't do a lot of paid marketing. I don't do the pay for play associations. I did that in the first year and I don't like it. It's people just to rub elbows. I was involved in politics for a while in Washington. And that was something I saw very clearly and got in deep with it. And I see that in industries like this, and it's nothing I want to be associated with.
Mm-hmm. Do you run into any challenges from a business perspective for being so outspoken in your beliefs?
I do. But that's not going to stop me. People are outspoken in their anti-beliefs, if you want to call it that. And, you know, so why should I have to close my mouth or be careful about what I say because it may cause somebody to, you know, get a little flustered because I'm speaking on scripture. I will never change that about me of who I am because, you know, in scripture, you know, there's one thing that we're told to do, and that's to ultimately be a light. And that's not to try to tell people how they live their life, live your life a way that according to scripture in hopes that others will see how that is done. And I can tell you this right now, David, I have had many clients that have contacted us to have a meeting. During the meeting, I can discern that they're also fellow believers. We will stop dead in our tracks and do prayer over everybody in the meetings, and they enjoy it. So for me, this business is, it's not about this industry for me. It's not about us. It's about the bigger picture. What's the bigger picture? The bigger picture is what we're supposed to be doing as a family. We're all brothers and sisters in Messiah, you know, our creator. We're all his children. So it's up to us to be able to work together and stop the fighting and stop the arguing.
Mm-hmm. I completely agree with that. There's too much fighting just for entertainment purposes. When you're out in the field, what are things that you're seeing in the industry that you would like to change?
Oh, fear.
Yeah.
That's a big one, I think.
Fear over
farmers are scared of losing everything for right reason though. You know, it's typically in the meetings that we have, and this is not to toot our horn as a company, but you know, the things that we hear from our clients when they have meetings with us, it's kind of the same across the board. Hey, we've been having months and months of meetings. We have never had a meeting with as much factual information as we have with you guys or helped us out as much as you guys. We're like, wow, we really appreciate that. And actually that's very sad to hear because what we're finding out is that people are trying to sell something. So they're fabricating lies to the buyers, which typically ends up being a farmer. Mm-hmm. And so farmers, you know, within any industry, if you're seeing a bunch of misinformation, it's going to do a couple things. One, it's just going to hose you all together. Or two, it's going to cause you to say, wait a minute, I'm going to back up a little bit. I'm going to let all this chaos subside. I don't want to be involved in any of this. And I'm going to let it settle before I get in. And that's ultimately, I kind of got scared out of it. Mm-hmm. And so that fear kind of runs us, and that, you know, that's a typical thing for human nature in general. Fear can kind of prevent us from asking questions, from engaging in something, mm-hmm. from being who we are called to be. Yeah. And so I kind of see it as that, and subsiding that fear. I've been speaking the truth, the unwanted truth. You know, so most people are trying to make this industry out to be like it's all rainbows and butterflies, and no industry really is. And especially when it comes to agriculture. And if you're ever been around a group of farmers, you have two different kinds of farmers. Even you got those that are about the big name and those that like to help one another out, and they typically clash. Again, that's within any industry.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, on the other side of that fear though, I grew up in a small farming town. And I think I find it encouraging because a lot of those farmers that are typically risk averse are asking questions about cannabis and hemp. And it's blowing my mind because these are guys that, you know, are normally just talking about rotating like, you know, soy and corn. And all of a sudden they're just like, what if we were to introduce this sort of crop? Is this? And I'm like, I don't even know how to respond because I'm like, I didn't even think that'd be on your radar.
Sure. Yeah. Even with that, I think you have a couple different types of farmers and the reasoning or the intent behind the question. Some are like, probably see this plant as, hey, this is a great crop that's going to be great for phytoremediation. It's going to cleanse my soil. It's going to be a good rotational crop. I can make a little bit of revenue from it as well. I want to use this. Others may be getting into it like, hey, what do I need with the hemp? What about X, Y, and Z? Because they heard somebody else say something, oh, you can make $50,000 an acre if you buy a dollar seed and you plant these like this. And so they're probing questions, trying to find, well, what's the validity in this? So I think it's always going to be two different sides of the coin, just like you said a minute ago. On the intent, people are either getting in because they want to generate revenue, or somebody's getting in this because they see the sustainability or the medicinal aspect of it.
Okay. So you recently entered a partnership you have a partnership with Kecha Labs. Am I saying that right? Kecha Labs?
Yeah, Kecha Labs. That's right.
Okay. Could you tell me a little bit about that partnership and kind of how it came to fruition?
Yeah. So we were fortunate enough to meet with one of their team members last year. I don't know that he's still with the company. I think they've had a bunch of few moves happen as they're acquiring more facilities. But we were working with them closely, and, you know, for us to partner with a company, it's, again, we vet them. And so we actually met them at a trade show. I think it was an expo in Kentucky, actually, where we were one of the sponsors and they had a booth next to us. So we met with some of their team and asked a bunch of questions and found out about their testing capabilities and that they're not just a new company trying to get into this industry. They've been doing lab tests for, you know, many, many years. They have a very large team. And they actually have more labs scattered throughout the U.S. than any other testing facility that I know of to date anywhere in the country, including facilities that are registered with the DEA.
Okay. So you're good with trade shows, but you don't want to be a part of the association, right?
So the trade show was a last year thing. I wouldn't say that I'm good with them. Public speaking has never been a thing for me for those reasons that I said earlier. But sometimes, you know, you just have to step out of your shell and do what you're called to do. And I think that I was created to be able to speak to people. So I had to break out of my shell. What scripture says, die unto yourself. I had to subside my fear of public speaking and allow the Father to place me into these atmospheres and see how it happened. I did speak a few speaking slots at some of the trade shows. I've actually spoken against other manufacturing companies publicly, stood on stage and spoke directly against them. Don't have any concerns. Oh, yeah, that didn't go across too well. But it was all facts. And I will never sly away from speaking the truth. So, you know, this year we're not doing trade shows more so because of the COVID stuff, but then also even if COVID wasn't here, I probably wouldn't be doing the trade shows again because it's more of a click. It's tough for me to bring a large dryer, you know, to a trade show. We do have a very extravagant booth set up that's like 30 feet by 30 feet. It's about 15 feet tall, big arches and TVs and lots of graphics. So it's a really cool little setup that we had built and designed for us that we bring to the trade shows. But again, that was last year. If we do it again, I'm not sure. I have no intentions to do it this year right now. Our schedules are looking pretty busy. Trade shows take a lot of time. We don't have any sales reps. Typically, when you have a trade show, you send a rep there. Mm-hmm. I don't believe in using sales reps. I want the people that are working with us, which are typically a farmer or a business that are working directly with us, I want them to be able to deal with the executive team. And so that's another reason that it's hard for us. I can't be everywhere at once.
Right.
I also go to all my installations. I make it a point to show up at every installation that we have with our clients. It's very rare that you'll see an executive team do that.
So are you the only sales rep?
No, I'm not. No, I'm okay. Not. We do have another, we have some more people on our executive team. Okay. It's like when you call, it depends on what type of equipment you're looking for. The calls get funneled over to different departments. We do have a technology department and then some, we have our own CFO firm as well that works with us to help provide business plans, prospectus and pro formas for companies that need it, as well as securing funding for these big projects.
So you say that you go to every install. Do you find yourself ever at an install And you suddenly realize it's not going to work out, that something
no,
has changed?
No. That would be horrible. that would be a rough one. So we have a significant amount of engineers that go through all of our designs. We build everything on site, not on site for the client site, but at our manufacturing facility. Once it's built, we commission them there. We run tests there as much as we can, obviously. We can't bring a bunch of hemp over to the factory since we're not a licensed processor for that location. So we try to do all our checks and balances and tweaks on site. And then as we're doing the installation, we set aside, you know, typically depending on the equipment that we're doing, a week time frame to be there to get it set up, to run some tests. And then we have automation in play too, so we can actually remote monitor a lot of our systems for our clients to anticipate possible hiccups that they may have and prevent those from happening in the future for them. But having something there during an install, we're never like, oh no, this isn't going to work. We do our due diligence prior to.
Yeah. Well, actually that's an interesting point. So you need to have a license as a processor to even test your equipment with the product?
Well, so technically speaking, again, legal mindset, very black and white. The law state, and depending on the state, of course, because state mandates, a processor. So you have a producer's license and a processor's license. So a farmer is a producer, and then the processor is any aspect after harvest. So even if you're drying it, you're technically classified as a processor. So you have drying, separation, and then extraction. All of those fall under the name of a processor. The first year we were licensed processors. We decided not to renew our license in the second year, nor going on into the third year. So when we're testing our equipment, one thing we were able to do was get a truckload brought in to our facility to test our drying systems. And that's when we actually had Kachel Labs come out. We pulled 7 different samples from the whole transit. Before the harvest header hit it, after the header, before it got loaded, before it shipped, after it shipped, and then 2 after it ran through the system. We actually were able to prove that our drying system with our programs had a 0 loss of cannabinoids. Not a single company that I have seen yet has been able to furnish those documents and video evidence of it. We actually recorded it, of the video of pulling the sample, handing it to Kachel Labs, let them run the test, because we know how people tear things apart. So we're like, we're going to do this live. We're going to record this and let you see it for yourself. And we didn't even reveal the results. We actually had one of their reps come into a video with us. We recorded the whole video and we let them explain. So explain it. What do you see with these tests? What's the results? I'm like, wow, man, your dryer, it's not hurting the plant at all.
Man. I mean, that's talk about a testimony. I mean, with absolute, I guess you're right. People do look for sort of those little details to tear apart. And it's kind of cool that you kind of put all that information out there right out of the gate. So that way
you have to plan for that. It's understanding the minds of others. You have to understand consumers, what they're going to be looking for. And you have to understand those people that want to hurt your business too. You know, you have to understand how the enemy works so that you can actually be able to counter that prior to.
Well, talking about the enemy, but you know, you said that you're not afraid to speak out against other manufacturers that are making false claims. So you've found yourself doing that at speaking engagements, stuff like that. Are they equipment manufacturers that are making the other claims? Yeah,
but it's more so than that too. You know, we work very closely with a company called The Plug Supply. That's owned by a gentleman named Brad Menard. He's an amazing brother of mine. Known him for a couple years now. We've got a very good personal relationship outside of the business as well. And they provide seeds to the industry. He is on the same page as me of speaking against the industry on, you know, the lies. Seed sellers selling stuff at a buck a seed. Well, he cut the market this year at 15 cents. Seed people are going after him. Why are you doing this? You're ruining the industry. No, we're actually helping it. You're ruining the industry by lying to farmers. At $1 a seed, 2,000 seeds per plant per acre at a minimum, that's $2,000 input costs. They need to be under 4. There's no way they're going to make money that way. And then in regards to the equipment manufacturers, you know, like I said earlier, people are creating their first stage of equipment and selling it in the industry. Oh, this is perfect. This is going to work. And then you see them producing step 2, step 3, step 4, these different generations of them. Like, wait a minute, I thought you said the first one was good. Yeah, but we learned some new things. So you're not actually taking the time to learn now and then produce a good product and then sell it to the industry. You're doing these. Right. So I actually spoke on one that somebody was talking about for hemp fiber and harvesting methods. And I never mention the companies that I have these issues with, competitors even. I never speak on the names of them. because again, that can turn, that can get turned around real quickly and then come back and target. I have no issues with saying, wait a minute. And I do it in a very tactful way. And typically you shall know them by their fruits. You can see that if you speak truth, sometimes people get a little emotionally reactive. Mm-hmm. If somebody's emotionally reacting, that tells me that they're triggered. Well, why are they triggered? Ah, they didn't like what I said. Was it the fact that it was truthful? Could be. Was it a lie? No. So not mad that I lied. They're more so mad that I'm uncovering truth. I actually had a company that tag teamed me. Every one of their executives came after me when I started talking about our drying systems and explaining the issues of other types of drying technology and why they are not made for hemp, and had proof of a federal document that was created about 15 years ago and showcased that as evidence. Every one of their team members tried to set up a meeting with me to hound me. Obviously, I'm not going to show up to that video conference with you guys. You can just beat on me, but that's what they intended to do. And I see this stuff a mile away. But the fear of that, it's not going to stop me from speaking the truth. Just like, you know, fear itself, it will not stop me from moving forward.
So two things on that. So when you guys do upgrades, new features on equipment, do you roll those out to other people that have legacy systems already in the field?
You got it. We absolutely do. Typically, we do it for free. Okay. So an example, like we've got a client that's based in Illinois, Infinity Health Farms. Okay. They actually were using one of our competitors for a drying system at one point, suffered some intense losses, damage to their crop. They entered into a lawsuit. They won the lawsuit. They recouped some money. The system was retrieved from the manufacturer. They contacted us. We put a system in. They've been smooth sailing ever since. Not a single issue, not a single fire. No loss to their crop, and their business is expanding. They now have retail products.
So what is it about your tech that sets you apart from your competitors?
That would require me to know exactly how their operations are. And so I can't really make that statement without leaving some gray openings. But I think it comes down to the people and how they operate and what their intents are trying to do. For us, it is solving the problem. If we know that we're not going to be able to produce a piece of equipment that is exactly what they need, we tell them, you know, we're just not the best fit for you, but we do know some other companies that have something that's more so along your lines. We'll send them that direction. Okay. To me, a business comes down to the people that operate it. That's why I don't cling to a name like a company name. It's about the people that are within it. All of our clients, they don't come to GHS or Global Hemp Solutions because of the name. Oh, you guys are the hemp solution. We're going to come to you and talk to you. They typically have dealt with our personnel and have had meetings with us, just like you and I are here. We have a meeting with every one of our clients that work with us. We don't move forward with equipment purchases unless we have a face-to-face. And in doing so, it allows us to know about them, and they get to know who we are and how we conduct business. Far to date, I have not heard anything negative about our interactions with any of our clients. So if, to me, what sets us apart, it's the people within it and how we conduct ourselves and how we do business.
What are your expectations for the industry going forward?
What I expect or what I would like are two different things.
So let's start with what would you like and then what you expect.
I would love to see all the tares, if we're calling it like the wheat and the tare, like in scripture. I'd like to see the bad apples removed. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you have a bunch of good apples and throw a rotten one in the mix, sooner or later, it dissipates out and gets out to the rest and the whole thing is spoiled. I think that we're in that year. This year is going to be the year that we're going to see a lot of changes. I think we're going to see some of those people that realize, I can't get rich anymore, so I'm going to go into something else. We've already seen some of those people remove themselves from the industry. So what I would like to see, I would like to see those that have a true heart to serve others, and like farmers that are truly in this for the right reasons, not just to get rich. Money is there to be made, absolutely. So I'm not going to negate that. The money is there if you're doing it right. But I would like to see the passion increase and more people working together. You know, even as a manufacturer, I don't believe in competition. That's when people ask, do you have any competitors? No, I don't really think so. Do other people create equipment similar to ours? Sure, but I don't think that they're competitors. There's always a way to work together. It's cooperation, not competition.
Okay. So that's what you'd like. What do you expect?
I expect the big corporations to move in next year.
Oh, really? This, okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do.
So does that mean you expect legalization?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
I think that the first step is going to be more so focused on the medicinal aspect of things, like CBD. So the FDA, they need to regulate. The moment the FDA says, yes, you can start putting this in food. Well, that should, if you understand supply chain, If you go to the grocery store and you're looking on a shelf and you see 15 to 50 different brands, all of the same, let's just say we're talking about, you know, different sauces, for lack of just whatever, you see some type of liquid that's produced and you're like, okay, well, all these different brands, what's different? Oh, their seasonings are a little different. And then, oh, look, there's this one that's got, it's hemp infused. It's got CBD, so it's better for me. But wait, it's 175% more expensive. Well, I'm not going to buy that. So it's a matter of how we're going to start getting this towards the consumer as well. It's going to end up being a commodity. You have to get the pricing of this the same as everything else. If we're going to compete in textiles, you got to get this closely lined up to the cost of cotton on a raw material basis. That's another thing that we're working on because of the industrialized scales that we have our capabilities of doing. So even on the medicinal side, I think it's a matter of getting the cost down. As we can see it over 2 years ago, you know, the cost of a kilo of raw product all the way down. I mean, it's been drastic. I think we're probably seeing the lowest point now. And I think I feel that it's actually going to come up a little bit and find its good plateau. It's dropped so much because there was an overproduction. But even with that overproduction, it's not viable material. There's just so much stuff because nobody's really found out, well, I'm going to do it over here. I'm going to do it here. But it's like, I just want to do this. I want to make some money. Mm-hmm. So because of that, everything's the wild, wild west and everybody's kind of all over the place. But I think that next year is going to be the start of something new. We're going to have fiber processing facilities that are online, operational. One of our clients that I can actually speak on is Eli Company, Environmental Living Industries, owned by combat veteran, Mr. Brian Wilson. They are actually working with us and we're building their fiber processing facility I don't like saying the largest in the world. Many people are making those claims, but I do know from knowing just about every equipment manufacturer that builds these types of systems throughout the world that this is the one that's untouchable. Okay. 10 metric tons per hour. It's a significant size.
Mm-hmm. What are your plans to grow the business?
So that's what we're working on now, bringing in some new team members, people that are outside of this industry to help grow a company. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say that I have a personal desire to do so, but in order to provide the best type of technology to the industry, you know, that does typically mean you're going to have to expand some different partnerships forming. But I have no personal venture in trying to grow the company and expand it. You know, if a product is needed and I can provide it, then I'm going to provide it. But if the time comes to where it's just not needed anymore, then hey, so be it. It's not needed. You know, if my time has come, then there it is. But as long as there's a need for equipment and somebody to provide the truth, I'm going to be here.
When you talk about bringing in people from outside the industry, are you talking about like engineers, people from an operational perspective, or like C-level people?
Both actually. So even like operational standpoint, you know, we're bringing some technology officers in, operating officers that have helped other companies grow, like Fortune 500 companies, multi-billion-dollar businesses that have been there from the ground up, people that actually what their job is to do is to help the company grow. So, you know, me bringing people in, sitting on our board to be advisors as well to help us reach that point. We haven't decided if we're doing anything public yet. That is one of the reasons we decided to go to a subchapter S corp and just to allow us the opportunity for, you know, different angles.
Do you find more success finding people from a specific industry, or are you looking for somebody with a specific expertise in a specific industry? Or is it kind of how you also talked about, like, you like to get to know somebody, get to meet them? Like, I mean, is it a combination of the two?
I'd say more so a combination. Think of it like this, you know, the educational system that we have today, elementary schools, mm-hmm. you know, they have a criteria. They have their own doctrine in the school, if you will. And they have the set plans. My grandmother was a teacher for many years. She happened to be one of my teachers. So they have lessons plans, and this is what you teach the students. So we're trying to ultimately create a final product, if you will, by educating these people. So we're saying all of you collectively, even though you're different and you have different gifts and you have different desires, things that you want to do, we're going to teach you this information so that you can do some of these things over here. And I don't like that actual concept. I think it's what we need to be doing, which is kind of what I do with this, is having those discussions. You can typically find out and discern what somebody's gifts are, what they even desire to do, what they have a passion for. You don't want to put somebody behind a desk if they like being out in the sun and getting in the dirt. It's just not going to work. And that's going to be, you know, hard on the company. So for me, it's not about trying to fill the void and hurry, you come over here. I don't know who you are, but you need to fill this spot. It's more so, who are you? Hey, I have a good spot for you. Would you like to do this? Oh my goodness, this is exactly what I wanted. That's what I think we should be doing. And I think we see a lot of that actually in this industry.
Okay. Is there anything else that we might have left out or anything in particular that you want to make sure the CEN audience knows about GHS?
We're here for you. You know, again, the motto, it's not about us, it's about the bigger picture. Always has been and always will be. We're one of those companies that really take the hands of our clients. We're there from the beginning, past the endpoints of where typically you'd stop working with a service provider and like, all right, thanks for the installation. It's tested. It runs. Have a good day. We check in on them. We want to know, hey, how are things? How's the family doing? You know, hey, you guys want to hang out? We're coming out to look at another property. We'll come visit with you guys, break bread. We truly try to build relationships. That's what it's about for us, is building the relationships.
Well, excellent. Jeremy, thank you very much. It's been very inspirational talking to you today. And thanks again, man.
Likewise, David. Thank you so much for your time, my friend. Blessings to you.
Well, thank you very much, Jeremy. I really do appreciate it. It's an inspirational and engaging story. And often found myself at a loss for words, which just doesn't happen. And I really do appreciate it. We'll catch you guys next week. This is Cannabis Equipment News Podcast. Thank you for listening to the Cannabis Equipment News Podcast.